My name is Anthony Brown. I'm here for the relator today. May it please the court. Thank you for taking the time to hear our petition for a writ of prohibition. As you know from the briefs, our county was charged nearly $3,000 for a special master in this case, which we contend the respondent, the Honorable Craig Carter, did not have the authority to appoint. Now, and even if this court were to find that that the Honorable Craig Carter had the authority to appoint a special master, we would further assert that he wrongly assessed costs to our county and our county alone. The first point I'd like to make is that there are no rules in the rules of criminal procedure that allow for the appointment of a special master. Rules 19 through 36 of this court's rules govern criminal cases. The only special master rule is Rule 68.01, which is found in the civil rules. Now, there are no references to that rule in the criminal rules. Other civil rules are referenced in the criminal rules, specifically rules on depositions. The civil rule on changes of judge when it comes to probation violations, those are referenced in the criminal rules. E-filing rules are referenced. Signature rules for pleadings are referenced. No reference to the special master rule, 68.01. Now, I would further argue that there's no statutory authority to appoint a special master in a criminal case. I couldn't find any statute that allowed that. And further argue that there's no inherent authority. Courts have a lot of inherent authority. They can appoint attorneys to represent indigent clients, for instance. They can appoint guardians ad litem to represent those who have interests that they can't advocate on their own because of maybe age or disability. I have not found no authority in the state of Missouri that allows a judge to appoint a special master in a criminal case. The closest thing I've seen is an appellate court appointing a special master on a criminal appeal, but never at the trial court level.
How do you think the court could have handled this situation then, because there was work that had to be done?
I think the best way to handle it, and the way I've seen other courts handle it, is an in-camera review of the documents. You turn over the documents, are in this case the recordings to the court. The court looks at the documents, are the recordings, and then makes a finding. There was work to be done. I think that work was best done by the trial court, not by a third party.
If Judge Carter had performed this function himself and then thereafter felt like he could not be fair, he could have recused.
Correct.
He could have even offered to either party and say, hey, look, I've seen this. I don't think it's going to affect the way I rule on this case. But if either one of you want me to, I can disqualify myself.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with that assessment. I've seen judges do that after taking an in-camera review of documents. They've either recused or they've said just that. If either one of you want me to get out, I'll get out. And I would point out to the court that the defendant in this case has actually asked for a jury trial. We were set for a jury trial before this court issued its preliminary writ. So a jury would be deciding the facts of this case. Furthermore,
just to clarify, did the master listen to the calls or looked at the calls to determine if they were made to an attorney's phone number? Is that correct?
The master in this case actually looked at the calls themselves. They did not listen to them, as far as I can tell, and ran, looked for the attorney's phone numbers, and then removed those calls from the 6,000 plus calls.
Right.
As far as I could tell, they did not listen to them. The master did not make any findings as to the calls, as to whether or not they were privileged or unprivileged.
What about the fact that if you want to use a phone and you're told that it's recorded, what's your position as to whether or not you waived your attorney-client privilege?
My position is, as soon as you know that it's being recorded or potentially monitored, you have waived your privilege.
Can't talk to your counsel if you're incarcerated.
Well, there are methods, and I would say that's more of a beef with the Christian County Jail. Some jails have procedures in place to allow defendants.
We're talking about this jail, and you're saying he couldn't talk to his attorney. that he waived everything, and anything he said, if he wanted to get advice of counsel, would be open to the prosecution and to the jail authorities because of that single warning that constituted a waiver, even though he wasn't given an alternative. Do you see the problem with that?
I do see a problem with that, Judge, and I will fully acknowledge that. But I don't make the policies of the jail, unfortunately.
But the policies of the jail may have caused problems.
Correct. And
such as recording conversations between an attorney and client when they occur via telephone through a glass window.
Right. And some jails have come up with a remedy to this problem. You give a so-called white list. Attorneys provide their numbers to the jail, say, and that way when a client calls their attorney, it's whitelisted. It's not recorded. It is confidential communication. Honestly, I don't deal with Christian County a whole lot. This was a change of venue. I'm in Taney County. Our county has a whitelist system. Christian County, as far as I know, I don't know their policies. But that being said, there could be alternatives. And if there aren't alternatives, I think the defendant in this case should probably take it up with the Christian County Jail, with the sheriff who runs that jail. Furthermore, on to my second point in my brief that I filed with the court. Even if the respondent could appoint a special master by either statute, rule, or inherent authority, the costs in this case were wrongly assessed. I would point out that Rule 68.01, which is the civil rule for appointing special masters, actually requires the cost to be assessed to the parties, plural, not a single party, parties, or a fund in the care, custody, or control of the court. In this case, the Honorable Craig Carter issued an order saying Taney County is to pay this bill, this nearly $3,000 bill. That could be potential. We have 115 prosecutor's offices in this state. Some of them are very big, multi-million-dollar budgets, such as St. Louis and Kansas City. Some are one elected official, and that's it, and he works part-time. That could be potentially devastating to some of our smaller prosecutor's offices should something like this happen in a smaller jurisdiction. Now, costs are a creature of statute. There is no such thing as common law cost or inherent cost. I provided two cases in my brief. Hyden involved a person who was stuck with a huge bill for court reporting. I think it was nearly $3,000. But the statute the statutory scheme that was established for reporting as cost didn't cover all of it. Didn't even come close to covering all of it. And so he was trying to recover further costs for that court reporting, for those depositions that were done in that case. And the court in that case said, tough, the statute says what it says. You get what you get. And that's all the law allows for. Now, finally, the last point I'd make is
Could I ask you first,
yes.
The cases you cite are Court of Appeals cases. Has this court held that?
Honestly, Your Honor, I do not know. I do not know the answer to that.
It may be a matter of first impression.
It might be. It could potentially be. As far as I could tell, these were the controlling cases for cost. I don't know if this is a case of first impression or not. It could very well be. The special master issue is definitely a case of first impression. The cost, I am not sure. My argument on that specifically is if the legislature wanted to assess costs, if wanted the courts to assess costs, they would. They would have passed a law saying that the court could assess costs. And there are hundreds, literally hundreds of statutes that allow for all sorts of different court costs. They allow for crime victims compensation fund. They allow for special prosecutor fees. No statute allows for the assessment of special master cost in a criminal case.
Is there a distinction between costs that are just added on as court costs, like the ones you've mentioned, and those expenses of the litigation that are assessed, and we call them costs or fees. I mean, is that a distinction in this case?
Not that I could find or I could believe, or I believe, Judge. I think cost or cost, they're all the costs of the litigation. There are attorney's fees, which you see in civil suits, and there are costs, and cost encompasses all of that stuff, depositions. In fact, one of the rules that I pointed out was cost for depositions in a criminal case. There is actually a criminal rule that says the cost of a deposition shall be assessed as court costs. And in a misdemeanor criminal case, if I lose my trial in a misdemeanor case, those costs are actually assessed to the county by statute. The county has to pay those deposition costs. In a felony case, if I lose my felony case, there's actually a statute that says that felony costs are assessed to the state. Distinction from the state and the county. And it's my understanding those costs are sent to state auditor for payment. So there is a distinction there. There is a further distinction between felonies and misdemeanor cases, and the legislature has acknowledged that cost can be assessed to counties and the state in certain situations. Finally, my last point that we've already sort of touched on is we don't believe the special master was even necessary in this case because the recordings on their face just are not privileged. There is no expectation of privacy in these calls. There's this announcement that says these calls are subject to monitoring and recording, and it fails two prongs of the state versus fingers test. Now, I'm not saying that the defendant isn't entitled to privileged communication with his attorney. He absolutely is, but this necessarily isn't the way to go about doing it. And if he can't get confidential communication with his attorney, then I think he needs to take something up with the sheriff of Christian County who runs the jail. It's not our possession of the recordings is the issue. I'd be happy to answer any more questions. Otherwise, I'll turn it over to Mr. Cody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Good morning. I do not necessarily agree that a special master issue has never been presented to this honorable court before. I've cited a case from 1971 involving a dissent by Judge Finch where he was citing with approval a previous case, as I recall that was State versus Green, where a juvenile officer was appointed as a officer of the court by the trial court in St. Louis. There was no authority necessarily for that that appointment, but Judge Finch, citing I believe it was an Oklahoma case, was enamored with the proposition that the courts had inherent authority to perform their function if they needed to utilize personnel for various reasons that they were able to do that.
You're always on an uphill climb when the best authority you have is a dissent. So let me start with it this way. If the court had inherent authority, where did it come from? What's the basis of allowing a master historically?
I think in this instance, it's the sheer volume of the job that was presented to the court.
Right, and so based on that, this court passed a rule in civil cases where we'd agree as a general statement, there's a lot more that goes into the discovery process that is sometimes required. So we didn't assume there was inherent authority. We passed a rule to make sure that judges could appoint a master. Doesn't that say something about whether or not this court thinks there was inherent authority, the fact that we had to promulgate a rule to even allow it in civil cases?
I understand your question, Your Honor, and I guess my response would be is that sometimes the law hasn't, the rules haven't caught up with the facts, and that's what I would suggest in this setting. I do believe that there's a case of first impression here for this court, and that is our attorney-client conversations from the jail privileged. I don't know that there's ever been something presented to a criminal court before. I can tell you that the process here As I understand it, I went and spoke to the captain of the jail. He was brought to the courtroom on the morning of this hearing, and he testified that the jail phone calls are recorded. Each prosecutor within Christian County, and as I understand it, in every county that records phone calls, the prosecutor can, from his own computer, his desktop, his laptop, whatever he has, access every phone call of every defendant that he has. All he's got to do is know the code, and then he can look at every phone call that's ever made by that particular person. In this instance, the Taney County prosecutor requested the phone calls of defendant. They were gathered by the sheriff's department, the captain of the jail. They were placed on a disc and sent to the prosecutor. The prosecutor then copied that disc and sent it to me. As I opened up the disc, I noticed that there were phone numbers there associated. My office number and my cell phone number began popping up quite a bit, and as I recall, there were in excess of 600 phone calls to me.
And why couldn't the court have just said, the parties shall get together, identify all the calls that were to counsel, and redact those?
Well, I think that there was a number of things the judge could do, but I was requesting that he disqualify the prosecutor's office because they had the opportunity to listen to every one of those
phone
calls.
And that's a whole different matter than what's before us on the master.
If the court didn't have authority to order the payment of the master fees, the issue of whether or not those conversations are attorney-client privilege or not doesn't need to be decided. You can still object at trial regarding those.
Yes, Your Honor, but the damage is done. If they can glean strategy from a very innocuous phone call where a question is asked, did you get to that witness that we had talked about, or whatever the circumstance may be, to suggest that they aren't able to glean what we're talking about, I think is folly. And that was my problem, is how do you fix that after they sort of get a roadmap to the way you're going to present your case.
But that would be addressed by a motion for the prosecutor to recuse, which is not before us today, is it? Because they had access to privileged information?
I don't believe that's really before you today, Judge. I did make that request, which was denied. This was Judge Carter's remedy to fix this, to say, okay, because the prosecutors had made a representation, hey, we haven't listened to these phone calls yet. And the judge says, you will stop getting these phone calls. I will appoint a special master to sequester these phone calls, and then that will fix this. I understand that there may have been alternatives, but I think what he was dealing with was a request from a defendant to say, this is an unfair process from now forward.
Why couldn't you just go through and say, these are all the ones to my numbers, take those out?
I suppose, again, that would be a remedy. The prosecutor's office is in possession of those at that point.
So somebody had to actually go through the transcripts and pull those particular transcripts or pull those?
Right. I mean, at this time, if you take everybody's statements on face value, assuming everybody who's in office of the court is telling the truth, there's no harm yet. And the sole issue is whether or not there was authority to appoint a master. If so, who has to pay for it?
I understand that proposition, Your Honor, and I'll say Mr. Brown and I are friends, Mr. Merrill and I are friends. I made that statement to the court that I felt as professionals that I could take them at their word. My client does not share that viewpoint. And that's sort of where I was left. I was carrying water for some other person.
Sure.
So we're sort of at this proposition that you're concerned about a dissenting opinion establishing this. Justice Brandeis, I've given you N. Ray Peterson, as I recall, had talked about the inherent authority of the court in the absence of legislation to the contrary. Again, I don't know that the law has caught up with this proposition that jails are recording individuals, and if you accept the state's proposition, any place in this jail, they can say, hey, we have a peniological interest in making sure you're not in there colluding with this person. We're going to record everything you do. Why would it, as long as they tell me that, then I have no remedy against that. There is
court do the same thing as a sanction if they found that they violated your client's rights by recording these and impose a sanction, which courts do have authority to do?
I think probably
to cover the
so.
Cost of
you have to accept the proposition at this point that there is a privileged communication, and that by breaching that privilege, that someone has crossed a line. I've related in the brief that I submitted that the Western District of Missouri dealt with this rather forcefully last year. There was a private jail that was recording the in-prison conferences, videotaping them, and then submitting them to the U.S. Attorney's Office. Now, I reviewed the motion in that case. The judge in that case appointed a special master to deal with these issues.
Is that a federal case?
Yes, sir. It was a Western District case, and it was Judge Baugh, as I recall.
Just
Booth. Thank you, ma'am.
Do you know whether there's a federal rule that permits the appointment of a master?
That's what the words I was searching for, Your Honor. There was no citation in the motion to a case or a rule that said, hey, they're prohibited from doing this kind of thing. There was no citation to an order or in the order to a case or a rule that Judge Boo relied upon that says you cannot do this kind of thing.
Did he order anybody to pay the master?
I beg your pardon?
Did he order anybody to pay the master? I understand they print their own money in the federal court system. We don't get that.
I've heard that, Judge. I made the order as part of the appendix, so I'd have to review that, sir. I don't recall. Nonetheless, I think that what we have here is a pretty good opportunity for this court to say what are the parameters of what a jail can do. I appreciate Mr. Brown suggesting that I can go to the sheriff's department or the captain of the jail and say, hey, I don't want this to happen. Let's sit down and talk. But I don't really consider that they're going to sit down and have a serious conversation with me. My options are extremely limited. And the first option that I employed, and I think the only option I have, was to go to the judge and say, this is inherently unfair. My client is being held without a bond. Perhaps that's because of the actions of his own. Nonetheless, I am limited to a time when I can go see him. To get into this jail, I have to send a notice 24 hours in advance, written, telling them that I want a contact visit. I've been there after that notice. I provide them my ID, and I stand there, sometimes on the order of an hour, waiting for their personnel to have the personnel to deal with me and the other issues in the jail. That limits my time that I can see him. There are four cases pending for Mr. Pierce right now. Based upon a recent ruling of this court, we're going to be combining most of those cases into the first one and sort of try them all at once. It's on a propensity issue. So we have a tremendous amount of work to do in preparation for trial. The notion that I can communicate effectively with him and prepare effectively for trial by just going and speaking to him is just not possible. He demands more of my time. He wants more of my time, and he wants the ability to communicate with me and be able to ask me questions, for lack of a better term, on the fly. And if I'm not able to do that and answer his questions, he communicates then with his family. We're not suggesting that those phone calls are in any way privileged, but this is sort of a process that continues to ebb and flow, and I am now very worried about the way that I communicate with him. I've related in the brief that there is a window. Sometimes you can go to this jail and have a visit face-to-face, but it's not contact. You have to pick up a phone. The inmate punches in his offender number, and that phone is automatically recording every conversation now. There was one of those communications that was not sequestered. There were several of my communications between my client that Judge Fitzsimmons did not pick up on. And so even after all of this, there are still phone calls of mine that the prosecutor's office is in possession of right now.
They're hard to identify because there's no number.
No, Your Honor, that's not the case. There's actually several different line items that demonstrate the originating phone number of the jail, the receiving phone number, The time of the day, the length of the call.
Well, I'm talking about the non-contact.
The window.
The in-person ones.
It appears as a phone. Well, you're right, sir. It appears as a phone number within the jail. Yes, sir.
Okay.
I misunderstood.
So it would be difficult, absent somebody listening to those,
yes,
to even identify that they were trying to protect an attorney-client conversation.
Yes. Now, sort of hopping around here, and I apologize for that. One of the things that I think is paramount in this is what is effective assistance of counsel here. And there was a quote from Strickland that I thought was very revealing. It said, the defendant's unfettered and private ability to consult with counsel is essential to secure the fundamental right to due process and the protections of the Sixth Amendment. So we have a premise here that I think most people can agree on, that a client should be able to communicate with his attorney. If we as a society are going to say there are circumstances when that individual should not have a bond, he should be locked up pending trial, then you get to the state suggested that there was four matters set out in Fingers. I could not find those, but I found something similar in other cases. Great American Insurance Company versus Smith. Now, I know that's a civil case, but it talks about four things. Information transmitted by voluntary active disclosures, number one, between attorney and client, two, in confidence, and number four, by a means which, so far as a client knows, discloses that the information to no third party. One and four collide, and they don't work very well. When somebody is transmitting information by a voluntary act, it's not a voluntary act when he's in jail. And the only way that he can prepare for trial is to use that telephone and communicate in some form to the attorney. So I don't believe that you have a voluntary act of disclosure here when the only mechanism other than an in-person viewpoint. And again, the state's proposition is that as long as you're told, then anything can be recorded, then this never ends. And there's no effective way to communicate with a client, no effective way to prepare for trial, no fair trial for that particular person. And I think that that's where it comes down is if he has a right to counsel and he can prepare for trial, how does Judge Carter effectively say, we're going to sequester these calls? I don't have time to deal with in excess of 6,000 phone calls and piece out each one that went to a particular number. I need help with that. There's no rule that says he can't do something like that. Therefore, is this within the inherent power of the court? I would suggest respectfully that it is. My time
is up.
Thank you.
Does Taney County have any ability to recover if they are held to pay these costs? Can they recover from Christian County?
Well, fortunately, Judge, Taney County is pretty well off. If we have Branson, we have a pretty good tax base, so we can actually pay the costs should the court decide that the assessment of costs could be allowed in this case. You know, if this were to happen in other counties, I would be very concerned about that. You know, we're a very rural part of the state, and several of our prosecutors to the west of us and some to the north of us are actually part-time prosecutors making no more than $45,000 a year, and that's pretty much the entirety of their office's budget is their salary. So that could be very...
You're assuming the prosecutor would pay as opposed to the county?
Well, I would assume the county would probably take it out of the prosecutor's budget. Now, that's...
It would seem like maybe it should come out of the sheriff's budget.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
The sheriff that doesn't have it, though, right? I mean, your sheriff doesn't currently...
Right. Our sheriff, you know, like I said, we...
Your sheriff has a whitelist. Your sheriff has a way to deal with this.
Correct. Many of the counties
do. That was my question. Does Taney County have a way to recover from Christian County? Because it was the Christian County Sheriff that caused the incurring of these costs.
I would assume if the attorneys wanted to get together and file a lawsuit against, if Taney County wanted to file a suit against Christian County for recovery of damages, I would assume that's something they could do. I'm not the county counselor. I certainly don't make that decision.
No one's argued that there's a way to recover that.
Right, right. I would say that there probably is a way to recover. That being said, there are just a couple things I wanted to point out from the argument of Mr. Coatney. The first thing, the State versus Green case, as the court noted, that is a dissent. The what he cited was a dissent. In that case, again, on the issue of assessing costs, that was actually a case from prior to the formation of the state public defender system. This was a case where prior to that time, attorneys were appointed by the court, and then the attorneys submitted their fee bill, and that bill was taxed as cost. They had to appoint attorneys due to Gideon versus Wainwright. You must appoint attorneys to indigent defendants. In the Green case, they basically said, look, the General Assembly, the legislature says, never passed a law that says we have the authority to assess attorney's fees as costs. And so we can't give you those costs, and we can't award those costs. And legislature, go do something about this public defender thing. And that's what then the public defender system was formed shortly after that. So that does stand, that case, the controlling opinion in that case, actually does stand for the proposition that you must have legislative authority to assess costs. I see that I am out of time. If there are any other questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
Any questions? Thank you both.
All right.
Case will be submitted.